Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
G'day and welcome to Runners Only with Dom Harvey, brought to you by Radix Nutrition. Coming up, Arch Jelly. When was, you think, the last time you and John Walker got together and reflected on like that gold medal performance in 76?
I don't think we've ever done that.
What are you going to miss the most when your life ends?
Well, you won't be in a position to miss anything, will you?
Archibald Jelly, otherwise known as Arch, is one of New Zealand's greatest running coaches. He coached the legendary runner John Walker through his entire career and all the highlights that that entailed, including an Olympic gold medal in the 70s, three Commonwealth Games medals, over 100 sub-4-minute miles, and John Walker was the first man to run a mile under 3 minutes and 50 seconds. Absolute legend. But I'm very sorry to disappoint all of you. This podcast actually has very little to do with running. I met Arch for the first time last year when he was 99 years old, on the cusp of turning 100, and we've remained in touch casually since then. On the week of this podcast being released, Arch turns 101. So I invited him back for a podcast where I would put your questions to him. Arch is still in tremendous health, physically and mentally, so this was a real treat. It's not often you get to pick the brains of someone who has seen and done so much and is still around and able to share that wisdom. I know his time is, he'll hate me saying this, but I know his time is precious, so I really do enjoy spending time with Arch, and I hope you guys do too. He really is a national treasure. Thanks so much to Radix Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. If you don't have protein as part of your daily diet, you should start as soon as possible. Protein helps you gain muscle or keep the muscle you already have, and this becomes more and more important as you age. I start every single day with a protein shake made with protein powder from Radix. They do, in my opinion, the best flavors, made with the best ingredients, and they have just introduced two new flavors to their range, mango and blueberry. And just like all the other flavors, these two do not disappoint. I was a bit iffy about the mango. I thought mango powder mixed with milk would be like an odd combination, but it really does work. It's really nice. You can check out Radix and their incredible nutritional products at radixnutrition.co.nz. That's R-A-D-I-X. All right, let's get into it. The Incredible Arch Jelly on Runners Only with Dom Harvey.
Hey, Runners Only with Dom Harvey.
Runners Only with Dom Harvey, and for the second time, Archibald Arch Jelly. G'day, mate.
Hi, Dom.
So great to have you back here.
Hang on, I'll just move that.
Move that microphone in a little bit. First of all, thank you so much for coming here. It was actually a little bit of a challenge. You were reluctant to do this. I messaged you, and you said to me, what more is there to talk about? We caught up a year ago. Not much has happened since then.
Yeah, well, I don't think nothing much has changed, I don't think.
Yeah, but I mean, last year we spoke for like an hour, and you were 99 at the time, so that's like 36 to 40 seconds per year of your life, and it's been an amazing, rich life, and it's still going. There's a lot to tap into, and a lot's happened on the podcast since the last year. I've got a studio set up now.
Yeah,
with TV cameras and stuff, and you are such a remarkable man with a remarkable mind, and you've seen so much and done so much. It's an honour and a privilege to have you here to get some of these stories and preserve them so that people can watch them in the future.
Oh, I hope they're worth listening to.
Of course they are. I outsourced a lot of the questions for today. I said on social media that you're coming over, and there were thousands of comments, a lot of them from former students. Tim Stevens, who's 43, said, Arch was my first primary school principal. How is he still alive? Penny Burton, who was at Mount Roskill in 1960.
Ah, yes, I remember her well.
Oh, you do? Do you? Yeah. No. Do you?
Yeah, of course
from
I do.
From 60 years ago. Yeah. Fleur Guthrie, Arch was my principal at Sunnybrae Normal School in the 1980s. Would love him to share some funny or favourite memories from that time. The 1980s. Being a school principal and a school teacher for a big part of your life, Were there kids that had names that you associated with bad kids? So you'd see the school roll at the start of the year and you'd be like, there's a Dougie. Dougies are always bad news. Do you know what I mean?
No, don't recollect anybody like that. No.
Never. Oh, God, there's a Dominic. He's bound to be trouble. First of all, how was your 100th birthday last year? So we spoke when you were 99 and three quarters. You turned 100. You had I saw the celebration on the news. How did you celebrate your 100th?
Oh, there were all sorts of celebrations. Like there was a big one at Pinesong, and you know, a lot of people there. And then there was one at the Bridge Club, and which was very enjoyable. And then the next day we had the 100 by 1 mile relay, and even I had to. No, I was going to say run. I didn't run. I walked the four laps of the track, but I was accompanied by about 34 others, I think, on my leg. So I think I had the honour of doing the slowest leg.
On your 100th birthday, you run a mile, which is four laps of the track.
No, walked.
How do you feel after that at your age? Like, are you exhausted after walking that far? Or?
Oh, not really, because I was used to walking, you know, 3 or 4K a day. Not that fast, though.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't matter, though, does it? You're still getting out. You're still doing a lot more physical activity than a lot of people 75 years younger than you.
Oh, I'm doing a bit, yeah. I could do a bit more, I think, you know.
Yeah. Come on, push yourself. Don't be lazy.
Getting a bit lazy.
I see you're wearing like a Garmin. You're wearing a Garmin watch. How many steps do you do most days?
Oh, about, I try and do about between 5,000 and 6,000.
Yeah. Take the steps or do you take the elevator?
I usually take the elevator.
Yeah.
Occasionally I take the steps, not often.
One thing that since we've become acquainted, one thing that I found quite interesting, so earlier this year I had Zane Robertson on my podcast. This is after he confessed to doping and received a 7-year ban, and he came on the podcast and it was very emotional and very tearful, and then you reached out to me asking for his email address at the age of bloody 100. Mm. Can I ask, what was your message to him? What did you say, or is it personal?
Oh, well, you know, I sympathised him in some ways, but of course he made a few bad decisions, and you know, you've got to live with that.
It was very nice of you, though, to reach out. I thought that was remarkable. You still keep your finger on the pulse when it comes to athletics.
And, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I've even noticed on the app Strava, whenever I upload a run, sometimes I'll get a like or a kudos from Arch Jelly. I get the notification on my phone or my wrist, and it makes me feel very happy. Makes me feel bad that I'm not running faster or longer. At the time of recording this, ambulance coming to get you. Sam Tanner, he has openly said that he'd like to break the New Zealand record for the 1 mile this year, which you and John Walker still hold.
Oh, I don't hold it.
Oh, you're very humble, but don't you think you deserve some of the credit for it as a coach?
A bit, yeah. A bit.
So this was set in 1982.
Yeah, it's when John was 30.
Can you remember the time?
Oh, I think it was 3:49:08.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? Do you think Sam Tanner has got it in to beat that record?
I would think so.
Yeah.
It's very, very hard to compare times, present day times, with times of the past.
How so?
Oh, well, I mean, the tracks are improved. The springy shoes that they use, they make a significant difference. And if you compare, say, the time that Peter Snell did 1:44:03, and the record is you know, about 3 seconds faster, but none of the present day runners could match Peter's time on the grass track that he ran on.
Yeah.
So it's hard to compare runners, really. Yeah. And times.
It's remarkable, isn't it, that this was 41 years ago and this record still stands in spite of all the advancements that's been made.
Oh, it's an incredible runner.
Yeah. Mm. Would you rather die with that record still intact, or would you like to see it beaten? Or are you just indifferent?
It wouldn't worry me at all either way, because all records are made to be broken.
Yeah. And I suppose it's a testament to John's ability and your coaching that it's stood for so long.
Oh, well, you know, in his time, he was the best in the world for, you know, for about 3 years. Mm. And, you know, that's what you've got to match, really. I mean, I think Sam, I think he's a great runner. And the Birmingham Games, his run of, you know, 3:31, that was the highlight for me. I thought it was, you know, a fantastic run. It just shows that he's got the ability to, you know, go a long way.
You've still got so much love for the sport. I can see your eyes light up when you talk about Sam Tanner and what he's doing. Do you regret not coaching a bit longer?
No. I know. I coached for years.
But you've still got so much knowledge and so much to offer.
Oh, yes, but it's a great sport to be associated with.
Yeah. Can I ask you, today, the day that we're recording this, you're 100 years old. How old do you feel?
Well, I do feel a bit older than I previously felt, but I don't know. You can't put a number on it, really.
But you wake up in the morning, you feel good? You wake up and you think, I'm lucky it's another day, or...?
I just feel, you know, the same as I've always felt.
What do you think are the top tips for a long, healthy, rewarding life?
Oh, I think the main thing is to keep moving, and you need plenty of exercise. I mean, of course, when we were young, nobody had motor cars, and we walked or cycled everywhere. And I remember when I was working in the city in Dunedin, and we used to get the cable car down, and if we missed the cable car, we ran down, beat the cable car, and so, you know, all good training.
Mm. And we talked about you walking before, so you're still active to this day. What about, and you're not a smoker, you're not much of a drinker.
I gave up smoking.
Yeah. You told me this last year. So you smoked like a few times when you were like 8 or something.
No, 9.
And drinking, alcohol hasn't played much of a part in your life yourself?
Not really, no.
Yeah. What about diet? What's an average day look like for the Jelly household?
Oh, we always have porridge to start with. We eat anything, really. No special diet.
Yeah. But you, like, in terms of, like, when you were a kid to now, I'm guessing there wasn't a lot of processed food back then. Like, there was no fast food, not much junk food. It was quite healthy and clean growing up.
Oh, yes. I grew up in the Depression, and so things were, you know, very tight, where everybody was really hard up. But we didn't feel deprived at all.
Yeah, so this is the Great Depression of the 1930s. So you would have been like seven years old.
Yeah, in the late 20s.
Late 20s,
30s, yeah. Things were pretty tough.
Yeah. What did your dad do for employment?
He was the local barber and tobacconist. And he was a Gallipoli veteran. He was wounded there.
Mm.
And I think, and he was a tremendous smoker, and we worked out how many million cigarettes he smoked. And but he had five. There were five of us, and none of us have ever really smoked.
Yeah, why do you think that is? How come none of the Jelly kids took to it?
Oh well, it killed my father.
Mm. But I mean, so this is the 1930s we're talking about. Yeah, I remember seeing TV commercials from like the 60s or 70s, and they said doctors recommend smoking, and your smoking was seen as like a cool sort of thing. Yeah. So you didn't have the knowledge back then that it was a killer.
No, it didn't. No, that's right.
You just didn't like it?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just wasn't interested, really.
Yeah. Well, that's lucky, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what someone wanted to ask, what's your earliest memory? I know on the podcast last year you shared a story about your brother chopping your finger off when you were 5.
Oh, no, I think I've got one earlier recollection. That's when I was at the, I think it was called the South Seas Exhibition in Logan Park in Dunedin. And I was on, I think I was about 4, and I was on a little merry-go-round, and I think my hat blew off, and I tried to get my hat, and I sort of fell off the road, and they had to, you know, stop everything. That's the earliest I can remember.
And then, the lawn mowing thing. For anyone that hasn't listened to the podcast last year, so you and your brother were mowing the lawns. You said it was with scissors. Do you mean like sort of shears or...?
No, well, we didn't have a lawn mower, and it was only a small lawn, and I was cutting the lawn with scissors. Scissors,
like sewing scissors.
Yeah. And my elder brother, who's only you know, 2 years older than me, he, Dad had given him the hedge clippers, and we got too close. And one of my fingers was almost sliced off.
Where is it? How did the surgeons do a good job? What finger is it?
Oh, no. It's
oh, that one there.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, hold it up to the camera. Wow. Wow. And then, so then you didn't have a vehicle, so you had to run to the hospital, take the tram?
No, I remember the tip of my finger was hanging by a thread. I remember my father cutting it off and dropping it in the hole in the garden. Whereas today you'd have put it
on ice
and reattached it. Then I was about five or six. I remember we walked up to the cable car, and that's about 1,000 metres or so, and then took the cable car down to the city, and then took the electric tram along, and then walked from there to the hospital. And then I was there for about a week.
And were you quite calm, or were you, like, screaming in pain?
No. It wasn't very painful.
Someone wanted to know if you've got any war stories. You were in a submarine, right? Were you part of the Navy?
For a while.
Yeah, so this was World War II. How long were you away for? You told me a story last year on the podcast about coming back home and not recognising your little brother.
I went away when I was 20. We went to in the Navy, and we went to England via Panama, New York, and then to England. And I had my 21st birthday in Jack Dempsey's bar in New York. But I wasn't a drinker at all. Mm. But we were in that's where we had the celebration. And then I did the 3 months course at Shotley Gate in England. That's near Ipswich, Colchester. And then I was posted to a cruiser, HMS Bermuda. And we were on the Russian convoy. And we went to picked up the convoy just near in Iceland, Reykjavik, and then we went on to the Kola Inlet, and we were very lucky because the weather was bad, very low visibility and low clouds, so we didn't. There were no the German submarines and the planes and that sort of thing. We never saw them. And on the way back, it was the same. We had bad weather, and we got through, and no ships in the convoy were sunk.
Do you look back now and think how lucky you were that that you made it home?
Oh, well, yeah.
As you get older,
you don't sort of think about anything like that. It was in November, December, which is in the middle of winter over there. And, of course, tremendously cold. But on the action station where I was down about three flights in the high-angle control room, and very warm down there.
Mm.
Because there'd been no show getting out if anything happened.
You're right screwed.
In the bowels of the ship. Yeah. But you never thought about that sort of thing.
Yeah. Was it only when you get home or as you get a bit older that you think, actually, that could have been very different.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, thank you for serving our country. I appreciate that. How many years were you gone for? Because you did mention last year.
When we got back to UK, I was seconded to the what they called the King Alfred. That was at Hove near Brighton, and I did the sub-lieutenant's course. And when I was there, at the end of the course, you had to say which branch of the Navy you'd like to serve in. And not that would make any difference, because they could put you where they want.
Tough luck.
Yeah, yeah. So for some unknown reason, I said I'd like to serve in the submarine service. I don't know why. At any rate, so I was sent up to Blyth, up in Northumberland, and I did the submarine course there, which was fairly stringent. And then I was posted to coastal submarines, either as a torpedo or gunnery officer, or my last job was I was a navigator.
I suppose being a young man from Dunedin, like the thought of even seeing a submarine, let alone being on one, is quite enticing.
Mm. I think I was going to say too, after I finished the course, the sub-lieutenant's course at King Alfred, some of us were sent to Greenwich to do a sort of a to learn the ways of the Navy, you know, to have the right demeanour for an officer and all this sort of stuff. And I suppose they tried to make gentlemen out of here. And who was it? Somebody said, I was just thinking, the famous New Zealander, I can't recall who it was, but he said about this course, he said, "We're not gentlemen, we're New Zealanders."
I love that. Now, how's your mental health been over the years? Mental health is a very, very big topic now, and you know, you look at the statistics and stuff, and we're in a mental health crisis here in New Zealand. But something that has struck me with the elderly people I've had on the podcast is it's just not something that was ever discussed about, or almost seemingly not even a thing. How's yours been over the years? I mean, you don't get to 100 without, you know, dealing with a lot of heartbreak, loss, grief and sadness.
Oh, no, I've sort of coped okay, you know.
Yeah. What's been some of the toughest times? Like I'm thinking of the passing of your wife. You know, you were together for many, many years.
Oh, yeah, well, that was very sudden. We, you know, it was all over in a month. We didn't know anything about it, you know. You just got to come to terms with that sort of thing.
Yeah, where does that resilience come from, do you think?
Oh, I'm not sure, really. But it's the phrase, the philosophy I quite like, and it's probably what I mightn't have had it then, but there's a, you know, the actor, Michael Caine?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, when he was first acting as a young actor, he was ready to come on stage, and there were a couple already on the stage, and they were having a violent quarrel. And one of them threw a chair, and it blocked the entranceway where Michael was supposed to come on. And he said to the director, "What am I going to do?" And the director said, "Use the difficulty." And by that, so he said, "Use the difficulty." He said, "If it's a tragedy, smash the chair. And if it's a comedy, fall over it." And so by that, he meant that even though a situation might be very, very bad, there would be something good that, you know, can come out of it. At any rate, in the last few months, Jean and I have both stopped driving. And that's sort of a situation which, you know, you're not very keen on, because it tends to take away some of your independence.
Of course.
But there are positives in that, because firstly, you're far better off financially without having a car. And secondly, you're forced to do a lot more walking, so it helps your general fitness. So that was we were using the difficulty.
A lot of people these days talk about just the impact that the pandemic and the lockdowns have had on people, and the impact it's had on our mental health. Some of the stories you've rattled off in the last 20 minutes about, you know, your dad coming back from Gallipoli, and you being raised in the Great Depression, you going to war, and you think of all the things that you've seen in your lifetime, and you've just seemed to manage to, like, just brush everything off and just, you know, keep calm and carry on, as the poster says.
Yeah, well, I think you've got to. I think, you know, your attitude to and your philosophy of life, you know, plays a big difference. A big part.
Yeah, well, thanks for sharing that insight. Someone wanted to ask the question. Being exactly half your age myself, 50, I like this question. What's been better, the first half or the second half? Just while you think about that, I was thinking about that on the drive to your retirement village this morning to pick you up. All your huge successes with John Walker happened in the second half, career-wise, as a running coach.
Yeah, it probably did, yeah.
Yeah. So what do you think's better, first half, second half?
When I started coaching John Walker, I'd served, a very long apprenticeship. So it was really, it was really a collision between a fairly seasoned coach and a fantastic athlete. And I was lucky that I'd served that apprenticeship first, so I knew what I was talking about and what I was doing.
Yeah. So the hard work was done in the first half of your life, and then you managed to reap the fruits of your labour in the second half. Mm. Yeah, because I've got a lot of friends the same age as me who are 50 and they're sort of like winding down, you know. But I reckon it's like it's a halfway mark and it's a new chapter, and you're never too old to do anything new, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. When did you notice people started to treat you differently because you were old?
Oh, it's probably just since I turned 100, I think. Because that'd be right.
What do you? I would have thought people would treat you like more special since you're 100. I don't know, like put you on a bit of a pedestal. Do you know what I mean?
Oh no! If I get a ride in a taxi and I mention that I'm the oldest client he's ever had, they're absolutely staggered.
Yeah. Well, I think it's just. I mean, a lot of people say they want to live to, a lot of younger people, or people my age, say they want to live to 100, and I think you're the poster child for that, because everyone wants to, it's a figure, it's almost like a mythical figure, because not many people make it, and to make it to 100, still be physically fit, and mentally as capable as what you are, I think this is something that like everyone would aspire to, so people want to like tap into that and find out if there is a secret.
No, I don't think there's any secret, because you need a bit of luck, because I mean, I've survived quite a few, fractures and operations and that sort of thing.
Yeah, you had when did you get your knee done?
My knee? Yeah. It was a full knee replacement. Oh, I was quite young then. I was only 98.
I'm amazed. Were they reluctant to give you one? Like, were they scared of the complications at that age or no? Did you sort of have to push for it?
No, they seemed to be quite happy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you recovered all right?
Oh, yes, except that it was a very successful operation, but the patient nearly died because he managed to contract pneumonia, which is a bit of a killer for the old boys.
You made it through. In your opinion, is society better or worse than, say, 50 years ago?
I think it's far more violent than it was. And when I was brought up, I mean, if there was a murder, that was... an incredible event, you know. But now it happens every week. Yeah. So there's a very big difference, I think.
Yeah.
Of course, there's a far greater population, but even taking it into account.
Hmm. What do you think that is? Is it lack of respect or...?
Don't know. It's I think the social media and the, iPhones, I've got one, of course, but I think that's got a lot to, that's, you know, everything can be seen, you know, right away now, and it makes things very different.
Someone wanted to know, this is a running question, what do runners do now which Arch thinks we shouldn't be doing, and where we should go back and learn from the days gone by? I can think of one thing. I probably rely too much on my watch. Like, I'm obsessed with my watch. If my watch hasn't connected to the GPS satellite, I don't start running. Back in the day, I'm guessing John was just doing laps or whatever without a watch, and maybe you had a stopwatch.
Mm, that's right.
Yeah.
I think the what they did, like, for example, Arthur Lidgard's schedules, you know, were fantastic, really. And, he sort of spearheaded a revolution in training. But on the other hand, that doesn't mean to say that there aren't better ways. Mm. And like most coaches in most countries, they would have adopted Arthur's ideas, and just about every top athlete would be in debt to Arthur for that. But they've accepted that, but then they've gone on and developed some better ideas put on top of what Arthur's thought. So,
not reinventing the wheel, just sort of tweaking it.
Yeah, and making so, I think it would be a mistake to think that if you train exactly according to Arthur, that you'd reach the top now, you wouldn't. Yeah. Because, but you still, you won't reach the top though unless you accept others' ideas and then pin your own ideas on top of that.
Yeah, did you and Arthur have much to do with each other or not really?
Oh, yes, yeah, we but there's one thing we never discussed.
Running.
Yeah, we never discussed running.
That's the one thing you've got in common.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
Isn't that odd? Someone wants to ask, what do you worry about these days?
Oh, I don't worry about much, really.
Yeah, that's a great space to be in. What advice would you give your 30 or 40-year-old self? Save more for your retirement. You're going to be here a while.
My 30 or 40, well, it's a bit late for that. So.
What makes you laugh?
Also, there's all sorts of things that come over on the air and that sort of thing that, you know, I quite like. And I don't know if I laugh out loud. I'm amused.
Yeah, you've still got a very good sense of humour and it's definitely still intact. We were talking on the drive on the way in. One of your favourite TV shows is The Chase. You watch that most nights.
Oh, yeah. What's The Chase?
A couple of laughs on that, no doubt, with Bradley, the host. Yeah. What are your thoughts on disciplining and raising children? How were you raised and how did you raise your kids?
We never had to, hit the kids or anything like that. You just treat them as ordinary people and, talk to them and that sort of thing and,
Yeah, it's very, very...
Nothing special.
Yeah. What's something about the world that completely blows you away?
For example, what goes on in the States, when they're seeking a new president, all this sort of stuff, and there's millions and millions of dollars involved. It just seems absolutely crazy, and the fact that to be elected as president, you've got to be someone who encourages more guns to be sold and that sort of thing. I mean, it's just absolutely crazy, but it'll never change.
Yeah, yeah. No, it won't. You did right. It's a funny observation. Thanks for that. Is there anything you still have on your bucket list? Do you know what a bucket list is?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't have a bucket list, but I do like to have. I do like to be working on some sort of project and that sort of thing and. That's quite an incentive.
Yeah. What is it at the moment? What's the project?
Oh, it might be writing a booklet on bridge or something like that or doing some work on genealogy.
Yeah, I hope you've got relatives that are picking your brains because you've got so much knowledge to share.
Oh, it's all there electronically.
Yeah. Mm.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What age would he like to get to?
I wouldn't have any thoughts on that, except if I was as long as I'm healthy, physically and mentally, I don't mind.
Yeah, because you told me last year on the podcast that there's like an app on your iPhone, like a when will you die app or a death calculator. You remember that?
Yeah.
So when did you do that? 97, 98?
Oh, yeah, that was you put in all the it's all rubbish, of course. You put in all the physical and mental characteristics and then it comes out with a number. And I think I I think they told me I had 3 years to go or something like that.
It was like 4 or 5 years ago now.
Yeah, but it's all, you know, rubbish.
Yeah. What technological advancements have amazed you the most in your lifetime?
It'd really be to do with, you know, social media with the iPhones and computers and that sort of thing. Yeah. Made a tremendous difference.
Yeah, because it seems like, I can't speak on behalf of you, but it feels like technology sort of moved along, yeah, relatively speedy, but then the last sort of 20 years it's been exponential. So I'm guessing when you were a little boy there was not even radio? Was radio.
Yep. Yeah, we were a very hard up family, but we did have, you know, quite a good radio. And it was one where you had wet batteries and dry batteries and that sort of thing.
What's a wet battery?
Oh, that's one you've got to charge and that sort of thing. Oh, well, I suppose a car battery is a wet battery.
Right.
Yeah. But I remember it might be in the 1930s, and my father was a cricket fanatic, and like he umpired cricket, including matches against various countries, for about 20 years. And before he became an umpire, though, we used to listen into the Ashes, and it'd be it must have been in England, because it was we were just kids, but we would be up with Dad listening to the radio, and Bradman and Woodfull and wow. Kippax and all that crowd, and you'd hear because there's no TV, you could hear the commentator, then you'd hear the ball striking a bat. But of course, it wasn't. All they were doing was tapping a pencil on the table.
Oh, I'm making sound effects.
Yeah, but I remember that very well. We used to be sitting up night after night listening.
And then when did TV come along? Do you remember? Was TV something that only the rich had initially?
Oh no, TV. I remember getting TV when I lived in Mount Alba, and that was about the late 1950s.
Oh, so you were like a grown man by then.
Oh, haven't you?
Yeah. Was that exciting?
Oh, yeah. 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 Because I remember Dad coming up and staying at our place, and he was, it was a black and white TV, and he was, you know, watching the cricket. He was quite impressed.
Mm. How have you managed to keep up with everything? You know, because it'd be very easy for you to, I don't know, when cell phones came out in the 80s or the 90s, to just get a Nokia and be comfortable with that rather than you face the daunting prospect of getting an iPhone and getting familiarised with all that. How have you coped with all the change? Because so many don't.
I've always been a gadget man. I've always loved gadgets. I'd always like to have the latest up-to-date ones.
Yeah, and you use it very well. As I mentioned before, are you liking posts on Strava and things? What do you consider to be your greatest achievement or proudest moments in life?
It would depend on, you know, which category we're talking about, really. But I don't sort of think about that sort of thing.
Now's a good chance to. I know you don't think about it because you're very, very humble. It's hard to get anything out of you, but maybe now's a good chance to. Let me get the ball rolling. Professionally, John Walker's gold medal.
Oh, yeah, that would be a top.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay, and another compartment, professionally in your career as a school teacher and headmaster, just making such a massive impact on thousands of kids' life. I mean, as I mentioned, so many of them have reached out to me in the past week, and this is testament to you. And bear in mind, it's a different generation. It's a generation where there was corporal punishment. You could strap kids or give them the cane or whatever.
Wasn't great on that.
Oh, I know. There's not one former student that has an unkind word to say about you, which I think says a lot. And what about personally? The greatest achievement or proudest moment personally?
Oh, it's probably, you know, when you get married, I would say.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. When was that? When did you get married? 19?
Firstly.
Yeah.
53.
And she passed away?
2000.
Oh, we touched upon this in the podcast last year, but there's probably a lot of people watching or listening to this that didn't listen to the podcast last year. It's a hell of a story. So you and your first wife and your now wife and her husband, you were like a foursome. You used to play bridge together.
We used to go away, and Gene was my bridge partner, and
so Gene's your now wife, yes, your second wife.
We used to go out and play bridge, and Rachel and David Metzger, they used to go and look in all the shops and all this sort of stuff, and while we played bridge, yeah.
And so then, and there was never any sort of attraction between you and Jean while you were married, and while she was married.
Not at all. No.
Yeah, you never even thought about that. But then, when you did your first partners die in quite quick succession?
Yeah, within the same year they died. Yeah.
Yeah. So it just seemed like a natural, logical thing. Like, well, you and me may as well get together now.
Oh, we didn't think about it to start with, and then after a couple of years we decided to.
Just like a convenience thing, or were you bonded on your mutual grief? What was it?
Somebody asked Gina, how I proposed, and she said, I don't think he ever proposed. And she said that, Gene said that he's not the romantic type. And apparently I said, I'm the more pragmatic, whatever that means.
Yeah, so it just seemed like the sensible thing to do, just move in together.
Yeah, well, Gene was living at Pinesong in the village, and I still had the house in La Vita in Mount Albert, and I sold the house went to live at Pinesong.
Yeah. How's Jean now? How old is she, and how's her health?
Oh, she's quite young.
Yeah.
She's only 90.
You like the younger woman, eh? Cradle snatcher. What hobbies or activities have brought you the most joy through your life? Oh, this is easy. Bridge, right?
Oh, yeah, bridge.
Bridge all day.
Oh, yes. It's an absolutely, fantastic game, really. And no matter how good you are, you can always improve. And it doesn't matter how old you are, or what size you are, or what gender, or what race, you can play. And, you only need 52 pieces of cardboard, and you're away. But, of course, it's bridge now, of course, it's more sophisticated electronically, which makes it easier. But it's incredible game.
How much do you play now?
Oh, I don't play often at night now, but I play every Monday and Wednesday at the club, and then I play at night online.
Right.
On a Monday.
Well, you just said a second ago you don't play much now. That's like a lot of...
No, that's not very much. We used to play it every day of the week.
Wow. And what about... so that question was, what hobbies or activities have brought you the most joy through your life? What about earlier on? Can you remember what sort of hobbies and activities as a kid were you into?
Oh, well, I've always done a lot of work, a lot of research on genealogy, and that's how I do five different families. And I spend a lot of time on that. And a lot of that was done before you could do much research electronically.
Mm.
Now it's probably a bit easier. And I've always been keen on photography and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I've always been keen on literature and poetry and that sort of thing.
How have your values and beliefs evolved over the years?
Hard to say. Yeah. I've never even thought about it.
Yeah. Do you think that's the problem with the generation now? We overthink things?
Possibly.
You were sitting in front of me. You just seem like a lot of these questions which people sent in, you're just sort of like batting them off. Like it's almost like they're overthinking things, and you just get up and do it. This might be another one of those questions. Is there a particular piece of wisdom or philosophy that has guided your life?
Oh, I think we talked about that using the difficulty, didn't we? Have we done that on here?
Yeah, where you talked about Michael Caine.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, we've done that. Well, I think that's a very important philosophy to have, really, that there's always situation might appear very bad, but there could be good could emerge from it.
Yeah, cause for you, how does the pandemic is the biggest thing that most people, I suppose, my age and younger have gone through. How did the pandemic compare to all the other things you've been through in your life? your Spanish flu, the Depression, World War II.
Oh, Vietnam War. I wasn't alive with the Spanish flu.
When was the Spanish flu?
No, it was about 1919, I think.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I'm aging you here.
Yeah, I was minus three then.
Yeah, yeah, but the pandemic.
Well, with the pandemic, I mean, there's nothing much you can do. You can take precaution, but there's nothing much you can do, so there's no use worrying about it. And, I mean, I got COVID and that sort of thing, and I was fairly cooked for a couple of days, but then since then I've been, you know, okay.
God, nothing bothers you, does it?
Not really. Yeah. No, not to any great extent.
What does get you wound up these days? What gets you, you know, nervous or anxious or mad?
Oh, I don't think I get like that.
Yeah. No. Have you always been this way, or has that come with age and wisdom?
Oh, I think I've always been fairly
measured.
I'm a bit of an introvert, probably, so fairly quiet.
Yeah. What are your hopes and dreams for future generations?
Oh, well, I suppose it's the same with anybody. You know, you just hope society will be a nice place to live, and they'll grow up into good human beings.
Yeah. What were some of the most challenging obstacles you faced throughout your life, and how did you overcome them?
I remember when this would be about 2004, and I was buttering Jean's toast in the morning. She was still in bed, of course, and which is unlikely, actually, and all of a sudden, my left arm stopped functioning.
So you were about 80 at the time?
Yes. My left arm was just hanging by the side. And then after 20 minutes, it was 100% again. So I finished buttering the toast. And so that afternoon, I went to see my GP, and he said, oh, something, you know, wrong. I'm not sure what it is. He said, you haven't had a stroke, but, you know, something's there. So I went through all the tests and that sort of thing, and I went back to see the medical guy, and he said, oh, I've got good news and bad news. And I said, well, tell me the good news first. And he said, oh, there's nothing wrong with the brain. It's just as good as it's ever been. I'm not sure how good it was.
And then
he said, but have a look at the screen. And he showed me the screen, and there was a thing about the size of a small golf ball in the back of my head. And he said, it's probably a meningioma. And he said, that's the sort of tumour I would have if I had the choice. And he said, I can take it out in July. So he... I said, well, I'd like it taken out before then. So I said, but I can't. I've got to go down to play in a bowls tournament in Dunedin before that. So I went, and he said, oh, well, I'll take it out after that. So he did. And I went into the hospital. I think he took it out on a Wednesday. And all they do is to, you know, cut the top off your head take out the tumour, and then staple it back on again. And I went home on the Saturday, and then on the Monday I went back and played bridge. But I didn't feel 100%. But then from that time on, it's never bothered me. And I remember my daughter said, oh, can you bring the tumour home as a souvenir? And so I asked the doc about that. He said, oh, no, I can't do that. He said, it's got to go to the biopsy.
Yeah, the biopsy lab. Yeah.
But he said, what I'll do is I'll take my camera in, and I'll take a camera of your brain and the tumour, and you can have that. And so I've still got that. I've got all that in Technicolor.
You know, I've noticed you've got quite a few scars on your forehead. What's that from? What's...
I had a... sort of a skin cancer there, and that was a few months ago, but it's okay now.
Yeah, and you mentioned on the car ride here you're not exercising at the moment because you had like a growth taken out on your...
That's right, on my leg.
Yeah.
But that's been resolved.
Yeah, have you always been quite good? New Zealand men are typically a bit slow at, you know, getting medical treatment or talking about health
things. Yeah, I'm probably typical of that.
Yeah, really? Yeah. I would have thought you would have been super diligent at front pulling things.
No, not really.
No, no. I was hoping to like sort of pick your brains to see how any one of us could get to 100 and still be as fit and healthy and vital and vibrant as what you are. But it does seem like there's a bit of luck involved.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you consider my two grandfathers died at 57, and so, you know, I've lasted a bit longer than that.
Mm. Is there longevity in your family at all?
On my mother's side,
yeah. Like what? Anyone else made it to 100?
No, no, no. But I think my eldest cousin, she died at 97. And I know my great-grandfather, emigrated and he landed in New Zealand in 1860. And I think he was 85 or 86 when he came. Mm. And with his family and and grandchildren, yeah.
Yeah, that wouldn't have been an easy trip, especially at that age.
Yeah, but I think he lasted till he was in about 94, I think, something like that.
Mm. Yeah, that's an interesting thing, isn't it? The transportation changes that you've seen in your lifetime. Like, we've gone from ships to aviation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Can you remember the first time you saw a plane or went on a plane?
I think the first plane I was on was on a flying boat from Auckland to Melbourne.
That's what we talked about this in the podcast last year. So, like a seaplane. I've been on a seaplane before, like to go to one of the islands in Fiji, but this is like a big one for an international flight. And that's right. You were a good runner, and you could have stayed back in New Zealand and trained hard and maybe qualified for what was then known as the Empire Games. No, let me finish. But instead, you went to Melbourne on a seaplane to chase a girl.
Yeah, well, actually, I wasn't in the shape to be going for a place in the games. I was only sort of a part-time runner then. I usually played tennis in the summer and then ran cross country in the winter. So I wasn't really up to that. But yes, I did. There was a girl involved. Yeah,
and she didn't come back with you. You didn't get the girl.
No, but I think that might have been a good result.
Yeah, absolutely. What were you doing then? Were you a school teacher at that stage?
I was always a school teacher.
Yeah. So I can't imagine those flights would have been cheap. It would have cost you like weeks' wages, I'd imagine.
I haven't got the faintest idea. Never thought about it.
Yeah. Well, can you remember anything about that flight? That must have been like terrifying for the first time going in a.
No. Without a hitch. No.
Yeah. And can you remember the first time you got to ride in a car?
The first time was a car would be going from Mornington in Dunedin to Ocean View in Brighton. For a holiday was my great uncle. Yeah.
Yeah. Was he rich? Like, I'm guessing the cars
no,
were only.
And this was a car of a friend of ours.
Right.
We never had a car.
You just didn't have the money. I'm guessing it was just
nobody had cars. Like, there were two people with cars on our street, and they were both plumbers. And and when I went to college in 1946. There were only two of the lecturers had cars. Nobody else had a car.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
What was your first car? Can you remember?
Yes.
Yeah.
It would be 1928 Oakland.
Well, I'll have to look that up. I don't know what an Oakland is.
Well, it was a bit like a bit like a Model A Ford.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Actually, I only owned half of it. My younger brother, he had the other half, and we used to share it.
Yeah. And what was the last car you owned?
Oh, it would be the Mazda CX-3.
Yeah. Yeah. And you decided not to renew your license when you turned 100. When was the last time you drove a vehicle?
Oh, it would be almost a couple of years ago, probably.
Yeah, late 90s. Mm. Just the changes you've seen in transport over your lifetime.
Oh, incredible.
How has your perspective on life and ageing evolved as you reached this remarkable age?
Oh, well, I've never thought about ageing or anything like that. I've just sort of carried on doing what I normally do.
Do you think the elderly get the respect or the fair treatment they deserve in New Zealand, or are they sort of like invisible to society in a lot of ways?
I don't know. It depends on the person, I would think, and on the where, you know, who they associate with.
Yeah. Oh, that's good then. So you haven't noticed anyone treating you any differently because of your
I notice that you know, when they find out how old you are, they start to, you know, treat you a bit differently.
Like, but for the better, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Does someone ask the question, does thinking about dying make you sad?
Not at all. No. I mean, it's just part of life, isn't it, really?
It's the trade-off, isn't it? It's something that we all have to go through. I'm just thinking of, like, my situation. Like, I'm 50 now. Both my parents are still alive. The only sort of grief I've had to deal with is the death of a couple of friends, you know, one through cancer, one through suicide, and the death of grandparents. But just thinking about the grief that I've got coming up in my future and how hard that's going to be is it's quite daunting. It's a lot to bear. But you must have dealt with so much grief in your lifetime.
I've never thought about it. I mean, if it happens, well, then you've got to deal with it then.
You must go to a lot of funerals these days.
Even?
You must go to a lot of funerals these days.
Oh, well, Gene and I are not great on going to funerals. Though we've been to, you know, we went to Bill Bailey's, Murray Helberg and that sort of thing. But normally we don't go to funerals.
Yeah. Mm. Oh, yeah, Helberg, he passed away last year. Did you have much to do with Murray Helberg?
Well, we're in the same club, but we're never that close.
Yeah. Mm.
Incredible man and incredible runner.
Incredible athlete, because he had what was he? He had like a disability. He'd be in the Para Games now if he was alive, wouldn't he?
That was due to a rugby accident.
Right, so he had like an arm that didn't function properly.
Mm.
Yeah. What happens when we die? Are you a spiritual man?
It depends what you mean by spiritual.
Mm.
Oh, well, when your brain doesn't function and that's it, well, you know, nothing much, I wouldn't think.
Mm. You don't think there's like a heaven or an afterlife or...?
No, I don't think so, no. Mm. I mean, people used to think, you know, heaven was up here and all this sort of thing, but I mean, that sort of concept, you know, it's gone out the window, really. Yeah. Oh, well, I don't think they're any different from anybody else in the animal species.
Mm. I love you. You're so pragmatic. You're great. What are you going to miss the most when your life ends?
Well, you won't be in a position to miss anything, will you?
No, but from the position of someone that's living a good and full life now, so you miss Bridge, you miss Jean.
Well, but you won't be in a position to miss anything, will you? Really?
Yeah, that's true.
But when I was, you know, talked about the afterlife and all that sort of thing, I mean, different people have got different ideas on that, and I respect that. I mean, there's all different ways of thinking, and everybody's got their own perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you have any regrets?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
No.
If you could live your life over, you wouldn't do anything different?
Oh, you might, but I mean, it's a lot of things that happen to you. It's something that you can't do anything about.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, something I forgot to mention. So you were a working teacher and principal throughout your whole career. You never made a cent through athletics, right?
Oh, heavens no. I was an amateur coach. And I remember my first wife, Jean, saying that if I hadn't been coaching, I would have had... we would have had enough to cash to buy another house.
Well, because of the sacrifices you had to make in order to coach.
Yeah, but I never thought about it.
Yeah, that I'm going to ask this, but I know the answer to the question already. Does it kind of annoy you now that, you know, if you were a coach, you're right here right now, you'd be making a lot of money for coaching at the level? No,
not at all.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
I mean, in those days, I mean, and of course, nowadays too, I mean, the sport would probably perish if it wasn't for all the amateur coaches, unpaid coaches.
Yeah.
And that's probably the case with just about every sport.
Mm. And you were telling me on the car ride here, you caught up with John Walker just yesterday.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You're still quite close?
Oh, yes, yeah. We meet regularly with a few of our old buddies.
Mm. Mm. What's regularly, like every few months, twice a year?
Yeah, probably. We'll probably meet him in about 3 months or so. Yeah.
How is he? So he's in his 70s now, but he's got Parkinson's disease. Mm. Mm. Yeah.
He's doing all right.
Yeah. What do you guys talk about when you catch up?
Oh, we don't talk about the old days.
You don't?
No. We just talk about what's happening now, really.
When was you think the last time you and John Walker got together and reflected on like that gold medal performance in 76?
I don't think we've ever done that.
And how would you like to be remembered?
Wouldn't worry me. No, it's nothing to do with me. No answer to that, really. I mean, I've got no preference, really.
God, it's been a great life. And it's still going. Who's the oldest New Zealander ever? Have you got any idea? What is it, like 107, 108?
Well, I know who the third oldest New Zealander is.
Is that you?
No. No, I'm nowhere near. No, Lloyd Gearing.
How old's Lloyd?
105.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Geez, you're going to be around for a while yet, aren't you, Arch Shirley?
Oh, I might be.
Yeah.
who knows?
Yeah. What about music these days? What do you like to listen? You listen to music much?
Not a great deal. Not a great deal. But I'm keener on musicals and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Rather than opera or anything like that.
Yeah. So what does an average day look like for you? You wake up quite leisurely, like around 8 a.m.?
About that.
And then what? You get up?
Oh, yeah. We have breakfast and that sort of thing. Have coffee later on. Sometimes go up and meet a few of the guys at the cafe and that sort of thing.
Mm, cafe on the grounds of the retirement village?
Yeah.
It's a great setup you got there, by the way.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah. And then, so that's like sort of mid-morning, lunchtime?
Yeah.
And then home for lunch, home for a nap?
Oh, well, no, never have a nap during your day. No, haven't got time for that.
And then the afternoon, how does that look?
Oh, well, two afternoons I go and play bridge.
Yeah. And then the chase at 5 p.m.?
Oh, usually, yeah. Well, I do a lot of work on the computer and that sort of thing.
Do you? What sort of work?
Oh, you know, it's either to do with bridge or to do with genealogy or something like that.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that seems to be the key here, isn't it? Just keeping yourself active, keeping your mind and your body busy.
Yeah, I like to have a sort of a project going on.
Yeah. Yeah, because it may have been Jean that told me that during the pandemic you ordered in like a stationary bike and you assembled it yourself.
Oh, yes, I thought it would be all ready to go, but when it when it arrived, it was in 80 different parts. And it took me 2 days to assemble it because the directions weren't very good. And I had to sort of assemble, then unassemble bits, but I finally got it going.
Yeah, that's amazing. And then and your evening, what does the evening look like? You watch The Chase, you watch the news, you watch TV?
One or two things we watch on TV, but we're not watching it every night.
Yeah. And then what sort of time do you go to bed?
Oh, I'm not a... I usually between 10 and 11.
Wow, a bit of a night owl.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for these insights today. How was it last year when you turn 100? You get the telegram from the royal family. It was still the Queen that was alive, so you would.
No, you don't get telegrams now.
Oh, what is it? Like a card?
Yeah, you get a card. Yeah.
Yeah. So, how was that? I know we talked about this in the podcast last year. You weren't much excited about it. When it came, was it quite an exciting thing? Or
It was quite nice to get the card from the Queen. Yes, it was. Yeah, a card.
And yeah. What does it say?
Oh, it's just got. I can't recall the exact words, but it's just ordinary. But it's got her photo and all that sort of thing, which is rather nice to have.
Yeah. Oh, what's that beeping noise? Is that your watch?
Oh, yeah. That means it's 12 o'clock.
Oh, what does 12 o'clock mean?
Well, I don't know. It just comes up and says snooze. Oh, yeah. I don't know. I haven't been able to undo that.
Yeah. So the telegram, the card from the Queen. You weren't much excited about that because
it was rather nice to get.
Yeah, because you pointed this out to me last year, and rightfully so. Like, she's not sitting in a room writing them all. It's but have you got it on display somewhere or?
Oh yeah, it's on. Yeah.
Would you rather have got one from the Queen or the King?
Rather nice to get one from the Queen.
Yeah. All right. Archibald Arch Jelly, one of New Zealand's finest running coaches ever, and just a good New Zealander. Thank you so much for your insights today. It's been a life well spent, and I've got a lot out of this conversation. I hope a lot of other people do too, just by tapping into the wisdom of just a good, kind, solid New Zealander. Thank you so much for coming over today.
Been a pleasure, Dom.
Really appreciate it. See you again this time next year?
Hope so.
Thanks so much for listening all the way through this episode of Runners Only with Dom Harvey. And thanks again to my pals at Radix Nutrition for sponsoring this episode. If it's protein powders, smoothie recovery powders, or freeze-dried, just-add-water meals that actually taste nice and give you the nutrients you need, check them out. RadixNutrition.co.nz. That's RADIX. Just before we go, you can reach me anytime on Instagram, DomHarveyNZ, or email me, DomHarveyNZ@gmail.com. I love getting your feedback in response to the podcast, good or bad. Actually, to be fair, it's only been good, and I genuinely thank you for that. Couple of housekeeping things before you go. If you feel like doing me a solid and you don't do this already, it would be epic if you could subscribe to the podcast. Subscribe or follow, whatever your platform allows. Most people listen to it without subscribing. Something like 20% of people subscribe. And I'm not actually sure what it does, but I've heard other people on way more successful podcasts asking their listeners to subscribe, so it must do something. I don't know. Also, if you feel so inclined, it would be awesome if you gave the podcast a rating or review on whatever platform you're listening to this on, Spotify, Apple, whatever. Even better than that, share it on social media or share it with a friend who you think would enjoy it. All right, that's it for now. Thanks for your time. Genuinely appreciate having you along for this journey, and I really hope you enjoyed it. And I do hope to see you next time on Runners Only with Dom Harvey.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.